candidates work with their instructional coach, who is the expert in the EL field, and they guide them throughout the year to work towards completing required learning experiences and assessments and demonstrating competencies across the TESOL standards. But in addition to that, there is a series of practicum requirements that teachers have to do within their classrooms and outside of their classrooms. So for example, they have to go and observe ESL certified teachers working with students outside of their grade level or in another context. And teachers also go and observe ELLs at other grade levels so that they have that understanding of what ESL or teaching English learners looks like, not only within their classroom, but in other contexts as well.
Welcome to Highest Aspirations, an education podcast that explores the world of English language learners and how we can make a greater impact. Each episode, we bring you voices from across the ELL community to discuss the issues that matter most. Highest Aspirations is brought to you by Elevation Education, your partner for ELL program management and instruction.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Highest Aspirations. I'm your host, Steve Sofronis. How might we design professional learning opportunities that provide both a quality, personalized learning pathway and a path to licensure to work with English language learners? What are some of the advantages of utilizing blended and personalized learning strategies to bring diverse cohorts of educators together around ELL instruction? How can partnerships forged between school districts and local universities help move the needle on professional learning that will ultimately benefit the students we serve? We discuss these questions and much more with Christina Soprano. Christina is the director of the ESL Teacher Certification Program at Roger Williams University, University College in Providence, Rhode Island. Before joining University College at Roger Williams, Christina served as an ELL coordinator for a charter school in Massachusetts and also taught English learners at the elementary, middle, and high school levels in Massachusetts and Rhode Island. Christina has also enjoyed supporting other educators with developing their knowledge and skills around English learner education. She is an advocate for linguistically responsive and collaborative teaching models that embrace the assets that all learners bring to school. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Let's get started. Hello, Christina. Welcome to Highest Aspirations.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, same. No, it's my pleasure. We've been talking quite a bit over the last couple months, and I've worked closely with Providence Schools here at Elevation. So really excited we finally get a chance to talk about what you're doing at Roger Williams in Providence. So let's start there. Can you tell us how the partnership between Roger Williams University and Providence Schools began? What was the problem you were trying to solve?
Sure. So in the city of Providence, as well as in the state of Rhode Island, the number of English learners in our classrooms is steadily increasing, just as we're seeing in many places across the country. And so while we're seeing this increase in our classrooms, we're not really seeing the same trend with the number of ESL certified teachers in our state and within the city of Providence. So the Providence Public School District sought to find an innovative way to help address this growing need. And they wanted to partner with a university that was flexible and forward thinking. And they knew that at Roger Williams, at the University College, that we partner with a lot of local organizations and that we've also worked with Providence and other school districts on other initiatives. So they reached out to us to see if there was a way we could collaborate to help support the English learners and their schools and develop the teachers' skill sets as well so that they could service them appropriately.
That's great. So it sounds pretty simple. Literally, Providence School District reached out to you, and that's how this whole thing began. You said that they had some other programs that were happening with Roger Williams before that?
Yes, and I can't really speak to them, but I know that they have been partnered in many other initiatives in the past. And so they returned to Roger Williams because they had that relationship established already.
Yeah, I think that's great. What a great partnership. And I feel like, you know, you're lucky, or Providence is lucky to have you close by, and vice versa. I think that both organizations can learn a lot from one another. And it's funny, it doesn't seem to happen as frequently as it could. So I appreciate you kind of bringing it down to its simplest kind of nature, where one district has a need and they reach out to a university nearby. So in terms of designing the program, I know that you had to, or you wanted to, for good reason, design the program to align with WIDA and TESOL standards. I'm curious, how did you bring together the Roger Williams University staff, Providence educators, and state officials, and whatever other stakeholders to work together around those? Because that's kind of a big, I imagine that's got to be a big design challenge to work within those standards.
Yes, it was for sure. And it was a very comprehensive process. And it really started with meeting and discussing the need at hand, and then taking incremental steps to planning, setting up work plans to decide who was going to do what. And it was just an ongoing process of meeting, planning, reviewing, and meeting, planning, reviewing again, getting feedback from the Department of Education. And this process happened over many months. And we continue to work with the district, work with people within Roger Williams, and submit application to the Department of Education until the program met the standards, met the TESOL standards and the Rhode Island Department of Education teacher preparation standards, and also met Providence Public School District's expectations.
Yeah, a lot of stakeholders there. So it sounds like it was a pretty iterative process where you brought something forward, got some feedback, and then just kind of kept going that way. And I imagine now, and you tell me if I'm wrong, you're still probably, and we'll get into this later, but I'm sure you're still iterating as you see kind of how it's all working out.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have meetings scheduled with the partner districts, and we're consistently communicating with them and with our teachers and with the coaches in our program to make sure that we're meeting the needs of everybody at the table. And we're also still in communication with the Department of Education and making sure that those lines of communication stay open, so that we're constantly looking for ways to improve the program and best serve the teachers and their students.
Yeah, and I'm sure through those meetings, everybody kind of has visibility into all the stakeholders and the work they're doing, which I think is also really valuable. So the first time I heard about the program was when I read an article that it had been approved. This was back in January. And I think, it launched this spring. You got into this a little bit, but what, aside from meeting with groups and lining them up to the standards, basically having lots of meetings and iterating, what did you do to prepare between then, when it was approved, and the day that, or the time that it was launched this spring?
Well, a lot. So, well, first of all, we had lots of info sessions within the district. We wanted to get the word out to teachers to help them understand what the program is all about and how they would participate in it. The district itself sent out notices to district leaders, principals, teachers. There were lots of emails sent out and invitations to info sessions. And we also worked during this time to recruit our learning guides. So we had info sessions within the district to discuss what the role of a learning guide would be. And we also posted positions and held interviews for those as well. And the learning guides are the instructional coaches that work for our program, and they work hand in hand with the ESL teacher candidates, and they help guide them throughout the year so that the teachers can demonstrate proficiency across the TESOL standards.
Yeah, let's dive into that that learning guide piece a little bit more, because I think that fits into what we talk about quite frequently here in Highest Aspirations, which is we just had an episode released recently about ELL teachers as leaders. Mm-hmm. What did you find what are you finding, I guess, that these learning guides are taking out of this? I mean, I know as a teacher myself, I taught for 17 years, a Spanish teacher in Massachusetts. And it was always something, it was always kind of hard for me to take that next step and do something new unless I kind of wanted to be an administrator. Mm-hmm. Did you find, or are you finding, that these learning guides are kind of finding a new pathway through this work?
So we've received some pretty great feedback from our learning guides, because our learning guides are have a range of roles within the districts that they work in. So we have learning guides who are ESL teachers. We have some that are ESL coaches. We also have administrators who are working as learning guides. So they're coming in from lots of different entry points. And I think what they're taking away from the program depends on sort of what their role is and how they're working with teachers. But what I've heard so far from many of them is that this opportunity has helped them to really dive deep into what it means to be a teacher of English learners and think about how they can not only just advocate for their students, but advocate for the teachers of English learners and support them in supporting students. And what I've also learned from speaking and working with our learning guides is that they love the opportunity to come together and talk about advocacy for ELLs and working with teachers to build cultural competence and skills associated with understanding how ELLs access curriculum throughout the content standards. And it's great when we can all come together and have these conversations as sort of like leaders within this community, because it's empowering and the learning guides sort of take the knowledge that they're learning from one another and can go back and transfer that into the field when they work with their candidates.
Yeah, I love it. It sounds like quite a collaborative process. And like I said, having worked pretty closely with Providence through Elevation, I know that you have some, as do most districts, you have some really great leaders there. And I feel like the expertise in the field of ELLs is just so kind of niche and so nuanced and so important as this demographic grows. And oftentimes it's just hard to leverage it for a variety of reasons. So I feel like that's a big plus for everybody involved in the district. And speaking of Providence, I know that you started there, but Pawtucket, which is right outside of Providence, also became involved. So curious as to how that came about and if you have plans to work with other districts in the area in the future.
Yeah, so, well, yes, we definitely have plans to work with other districts, and I can talk about that in a little bit. But in Pawtucket, they also have a significant need to service ELLs. And so last spring, they approached the university as well. And because the program had already been established and we were getting ready to start our inaugural year, we had a lot of work already done. And so we worked with Pawtucket and with the Rhode Island Department of Education to complete another program application process. And we submitted that and it was approved so that they were able to allow teachers within Pawtucket to apply to the program for this year. So we have a small number of Pawtucket teachers this year, and we're looking to definitely expand that for next year, because the application window for them was a little bit shorter because they came on a little bit later during the application process. But what we're doing right now is we're planning ways to work with other districts and the Department of Education to allow more partners to join on with the university so that other teachers may apply. And that would really consist of going through another program application process with the Department of Education so that we could have other districts approved to work with us.
That's great. And so I know that right now you're only taking educators from partnering districts. I'm sure there's probably a lot of good reasons for that to happen, but in the future you're hoping to gain some more districts. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. And so, I mean, the reason why we have to partner with the districts is because in Rhode Island, the ESL certification is an add-on certification and teachers need a base cert in order to obtain the new ESL certification in addition to what their base certification is. And so there's that component, but then there's also the nature of our program that teachers need to be working in a classroom with ELLs, and our program is very job embedded. So for example, they record a series of videos that demonstrate particular competencies that they're meeting across the TESOL standards as one component of the program. And you know, their overall goal is to demonstrate competency by showing what they're doing in their classroom. And all the assignments are designed to do this, and they're really designed to be meaningful classroom experiences for teachers to show how they're applying what they're learning to support ELLs. And so because our competency-based program is so job-embedded, that partnership with the district is so important so that the teachers also have that support from them as well.
Yeah, great. So that totally makes sense. That partnership's key and important. And I'm glad you just sort of got into that competency-based piece, because I want to talk a little bit about that as well. And this is certainly a whole other episode and a whole other podcast series, competency-based.
For sure.
blended learning. I'm lucky enough to be on a teaching team at a course at Harvard Graduate School of Education called digital teaching or connected teaching in the digital age. And we talk a lot about this, and it's really hard to kind of find a definition of what competency-based or blended learning is.
Yeah. So
I'm not going to challenge you with that, but I am going to challenge you to tell us, you talked about the videos and the competencies. What is a competency-based blended program look like in this model as teachers go through it?
Sure. So like you sort of expressed already, it is very different from what many teachers are used to or would expect in a teacher preparation program. And so our program is a year long. It's very intensive. It's rigorous. And like I was saying, the goal is that they demonstrate these competencies, the sub-competencies of the TESOL standards throughout that year. And that happens through a series of online, face-to-face experiences and individual learning experiences. And so each teacher is assigned their own instructional coach, and the instructional coaches have a couple candidates that they work with. And so that group makes up their community of reflective practice, so what we're calling their core. And so the candidates work with their instructional coach, who is the expert in the EL field, and they guide them throughout the year to work towards completing required learning experiences and assessments and demonstrating competencies across the TESOL standards. But in addition to that, there is a series of practicum requirements that teachers have to do within their classrooms and outside of their classrooms. So, for example, they have to go and observe ESL certified teachers working with students outside of their grade level or in another context. And teachers also go and observe ELs at other grade levels so that they have that understanding of what ESL or teaching English learners looks like, not only within their classroom, but in other contexts as well. We also have a requirement for teachers to engage in a few different school and family-based activities so that they work towards supporting English learner families and helping them become more involved within the school community or their classroom. And so we have the learning guide, we have the community of reflective practice, we have this mix of online, face-to-face, and individual experiences, their practicum, there are required experiences and assessments that all the teachers must complete. But then at the same time, we have optional ways of demonstrating competency. So we have teachers that come into the program from all different entry points. We have some teachers who are, you know, second year teachers. We have some teachers who actually have certification in ESL from other states and it doesn't transfer to Rhode Island. And
right.
So they're coming in to complete a Rhode Island approved preparation program so that they can have this additional credential here. And so we have teachers that have these range of experiences. And so they have opportunities to submit evidence that shows ways that they're currently meeting particular standards depending on what they're doing in their classrooms. And so it's definitely a flexible model, and it's designed to be very personalized and integrated into what teachers are already doing. And so we have these required experiences. We have optional ways that teachers can supplement the required experiences. And we have additional opportunities for teachers to come together and collaborate. I hear a lot that, teachers want more time working with their colleagues, working with people across grade levels. And so we're hosting ESL or English Learner Teacher Socials at the university once a month, where our candidates can come together. There's no pressure, no stress. We have a focus that's something related to an effective or evidence-based practice for working with English learners. And we get to come around, discuss the problem of practice, plan, find ways to integrate new techniques into their classroom, and then they can go off and apply it to what they're doing the next day. So we're really trying to help teachers learn these techniques, learn these strategies, and apply them directly into their classrooms throughout the year. It's the idea that they're learning and doing constantly, learning, doing, learning, doing.
Sure. And I mean, normally I would take a lot of time to kind of unpack everything that you just said, but I really don't, you did a really good job kind of, I think, explaining how this, what people perceive as a really kind of complicated beast, competency-based, blended, personalized, I think that through the, you know, you mentioned the CORE, the Community Reflective Practice. I love that acronym, by the way. People are able to reflect. That's online, correct?
That's both online and face-to-face. So and online, face-to-face. Yeah, online, they're actually communicating with the entire cohort of teachers in the program. And when they come face-to-face, they're working with their smaller community of reflective practice.
That's great. So that's a, you know, a true blended approach, and it's flexible. You mentioned that people are coming from this was kind of, you got to one of my other questions, which is what is the breakdown of the roles and the people. And you mentioned people coming from different states to get Rhode Island certification. You're providing them personalized pathways. I think you mentioned as well that they have different ways where they can kind of prove their competencies. Mm-hmm. So this is really, I think, a model of how we can use these kind of innovative approaches to education, leverage technology to professional development, and in this case, recertification. So I'm glad you went through that whole process, and I'm not going to add anything else, because I think if people kind of missed anything, I would recommend you go back and listen to that again, because that was a really great explanation.
Oh, thank you.
Of how a true competency-based blended personalized program would look like. I have one sort of follow-up question. You mentioned that people are coming from a variety of different places. I'm curious about roles. Mm-hmm. Are they mostly ELL teachers? Are they content teachers? Are they administrators? I assume probably all the above.
So they have, it is all the above. They have various roles within the districts that they're working in. And so the majority of our candidates are teachers. Some are teacher leaders. We have instructional coaches. We have former administrators who are returning teachers. But they all come with a wealth of knowledge depending on whatever their areas of expertise are. And some of them actually have emergency certification in ESL, and they're currently serving ELLs, and they're working, you know, they're in this program and they're working towards getting their full certification by the end of the program. And so regardless of how many years experience that they have or what their specific content area is, they all have ELLs in their classroom or within their school that they interact with on a daily basis.
Right. I think that's great. I think like particularly, you know, I mean, I hear like, I'll speak about some of our challenges. I mean, the big challenge, I think I would probably say in the kind of world of English language learner education, but we have a challenge reaching the classroom teachers, you know, getting, I taught high school for years. And I think we still live in a world, I think that's changing. But I still think we live in a world in which at the high school level, people are still, teachers are still looking at themselves as kind of teachers of content. And that seeping in, that idea that everybody is a teacher of language and that we have to kind of educate the whole child. And I think we're seeing that change. But that's a challenge, getting those classroom teachers to kind of make sure that they're up to speed. And that's a challenge, not just because of their motivation to do so, but because of time and everything else. So it sounds like you're reaching some of those teachers as well.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, in the very start of the program, we do a lot of work helping teachers think about what academic language is and what that looks like within the context of their own classroom and their content area. We have about a third of our teachers who are high school teachers who specialize in a particular content area.
That's great.
And so what's so great about our cohort is that we have such a wide range of teachers. And so not only can they collaborate with people who have similar content areas or similar grade levels, but they also get the perspective of people cross grade level or cross content area. And especially when we're talking about academic language, that's so helpful because people are able to hear about how something that they do in their classroom actually does have some sort of an application, maybe in a math class or maybe in a science classroom, or maybe, you know, 5 years down the road when they're in high school. And so having those rich discussions across grade levels and across content areas has proven to be really helpful for our teachers to really grasp what it means to be an educator for English learners.
Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that. And I mean, I would add, you know, an educator for English language learners, but an educator in 2018, right? I mean,
this is
not something that you're generally going to be able to kind of run away from in most communities. And you know, I'm sure you're bringing in a lot of the, we talk a lot about the asset-based nature that ELLs bring to the table. And I feel like, once content teachers like the one third of the cohort that you have now kind of learn about how they can best serve these students and they see some success, you know, that you start to look at these students as the wonderful assets that they are and you know, wonderful additions to the community. And then it just builds from there. It just kind of snowballs. And that's I think, what we all, the world that we all want to see.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And it's definitely exciting to see our teachers make those connections and really start to examine how they can create comprehensible and language rich environments for their students, regardless of what their content area is.
Great. So I'm going to ask you a question that that might be a little bit, I'm not going to call it a controversial question, but it will definitely, I think, maybe in some provoke a little bit of tension. And I'm going to ask it from my own perspective as a teacher. As I mentioned, I taught for a long time. And a lot of the things that I did as a teacher for recertification, even one of the master's degrees that I got, was definitely because I needed as an educator to check a box so I could continue doing what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I found very few programs, unfortunately, with the exception of a few, that really, really kind of stretched me and really, I could say, were wonderful learning experiences. This program that you're talking about now, this partnership, really seems like one of those that is extremely helpful. I'm curious about what your observations have been around, like why teachers are signing up. Are they signing up to check a box, or are they signing up because this is something that they really need to do? And then the second part of the question is, how are they walking away from this experience? I think you've already alluded to some of this, but I wanted to kind of directly ask you that sort of difficult question.
Sure. So I feel like what I've observed is that teachers are coming to our program because it's different from what they may have experienced in other places or what they would expect in other places. And so, you know, it's different from the course-based certification model that many of us have experienced. And that's beneficial to our teachers because they find it engaging. They're immediately using what they're learning and they're applying it to their practice. And their own professional development is meaningful to them, but it's also meaningful to their students because of this model. And there's also more potential for integration of ideas. Ideas aren't separated into individual classes or courses. We have assignments that cross domains or cross standards, and they're all woven into their practice. And so for some teachers, having this additional certification and skill set may also be a way for them to secure employment for them.
Sure.
However, all the teachers working in our schools or working in our program are in schools where ELLs are in their classrooms, and mm-hmm. they interact with them on a daily basis. And the teachers have made it really clear that they want their students to be successful. The teachers want to be the best teachers they can be. They want the knowledge, the skills, understanding to best support these students and be advocators for them, and be advocates and facilitators and be the best educators that they can be.
Right. And I mean, it sounds like it's a great marriage between what you just mentioned, which is, you know, teachers want to be the best teachers they can be. They want to have an impact on their students. But once they get into a program, they have a high expectation, as well they should, that the program is going to offer that sort of personalization and that pathway mm-hmm. that they need to be successful. And for the record, I think it's totally fine that teachers, you know, want to be marketable. I don't.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whatsoever. So it sounds like you're sort of doing both of those things in the program, which is the way that I think that it should be.
Yeah, it's twofold for sure. It's, you know, I agree with you, and there's nothing wrong with teachers wanting to market themselves better and be able to find meaningful employment. But with that, there's also the need to want to be good at what you're doing and want to be able to support anybody that walks into your classroom. And this is one more step that teachers can take to be prepared to service the diverse needs of students that we have across the classrooms in our country.
Yeah, absolutely. And just came to me now. I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, if you're better served to work with ELs, in the vast majority of cases, good instruction for ELs is good instruction for all students. So I imagine this must help, you know, in all facets of what they're doing.
Yeah, and we've talked about that within our cohort, and that's something that some of our teachers have brought up. And in addition to that, I sort of like to challenge that idea and add to it and say that while good teaching for ELLs is good teaching, you know, in general, it's also teaching with a language lens and really understanding what types of language is what type of language is being used when you're teaching your content, and how everything you're doing is connected to language in some way. And it's training your mind to look at instruction and assessment and interaction through this lens. And so when we sort of talk about, you know, teaching for Ells is teaching is good teaching in general, it's yes, and it's teaching with a language lens. And that's a skill that that needs to be developed over time. And it takes time for teachers to see how that works within their classrooms. But then I think it's one of those situations where a light sort of flicks on and you're like, oh, okay, that's what it is. And the more time teachers have to process these theories and research and apply it to their classrooms, the better they understand how this works for their students.
Yeah, very well put. Very well put. So this might be the most important question for the person sitting and sort of listening to this episode and thinking, wow, this is great that Providence and Pawtucket have this with Roger Williams University right in their backyard. I wish I had something like this. You know, how do I find something like this? Mm-hmm. So the first question I have in regards to that sort of sentiment is, what have you learned from this experience so far that might help others who are interested in participating or designing this kind of program? Because I want to go back to the beginning. Like, it seems like this all started because there was a challenge, mm-hmm. and somebody at a school district, Providence in this case, asked for something from a university.
Yeah, well, I would say that one of the big things that I've learned is that, and it's more than just learned, it's something that it's helped me recognize across the field, is that change or innovation can really be disruptive in a lot of ways, and that's not a bad thing. So like we see this in our K-12 classrooms every day with blended and personalized learning movement, and in other industries across the world where new ideas, something new comes along the way and it challenges the way that something has already been done for a long time. And that's met with a lot of questions. But it's also a great opportunity for rich discussions about how we learn and why we learn. And so now through this competency-based model, teachers are learning in a way that they're asking their students to learn. And so through competency-based right. blended learning, some teachers are pretty familiar with it from the instructor perspective, but they're not so familiar with it from the student perspective. And so now they're getting that experience for themselves.
That's so important.
And so with this idea, it's like keeping an open mind and being flexible and being okay with feeling vulnerable about, you know, what your strengths are, but then also what your areas for growth are, is really important in this whole process. And that's how we see some real growth. And so I would say that that's definitely one of the big takeaways that I've had just through working with the program so far in its inaugural year. Because we're servicing teachers and we're in education, I really feel that our programs cannot remain static. Like programs that service teachers can't remain static, just like curriculum for students can't remain static. So mm-hmm. within our program, we're constantly adding to our LMS, our learning management system. We're working hard to stay up to date and on the cutting edge with research and resources that are in the field. And because we really want to stay relevant, and we need to stay relevant within the local and the national context for teaching and learning for English learners.
Absolutely. Great. Well, I think that's crucial key. And you mentioned, you know, the disruptive nature of change, you know, that's so key, and it's hard to kind of embrace it when you're in the middle of it and recognize that this might be a good thing, but just embracing that change. And I think you also mentioned understanding your strengths, but also understanding your weaknesses and mm-hmm. moving forward that way. So as we wrap up, just a couple more questions, one of which is one that I ask everybody who comes on to Highest Aspirations, and it has become, I have a library because of it, which is great. And the question is there a book or any other resource that's influenced you either personally or professionally that you would like to share?
Sure. There's so many.
That's the problem.
So I know, right. How do you pick one? Can I name a couple?
You can.
All right. So I would say that for content, for English learner education, content wise, Margot Gottlieb is one of my favorite researchers and authors in the field. And she has a newer text that is called Assessing English Language Learners, Bridges to Educational Equity. And I love this book because, well, first of all of her resources to me are very practice-based, and they really help teachers frame their thinking in ways that they can immediately apply techniques to their classroom. But this particular text, she addresses assessment from a completely different perspective from what many people might consider assessment to be. And so she looks at assessment through the lens of assessment as, assessment for, and assessment of learning. And so she shows ways that you can use this lens to inform planning, instruction, assessment for ELLs. And she really talks about this paradigm shift of how most envision educational assessment, and she challenges people to embrace multiple stakeholders through promoting student agency and teachers using formative assessment, but then also state and districts looking at more high stakes assessment. And she addresses these complicated ideas in a way that's so practical for teachers to use. There's lots of resources and suggestions that you can immediately take to your classroom. And so I really love that book. I would also say that from like the program standpoint, another resource that I love is competencyworks.org. And that's a website that is dedicated to providing resources for K through 12 education, but also higher education for competency-based education. And their mission is sort of to begin to help the sectors sort of learn from each other and align competency-based education systems across K-12, higher ed, and also the workplace. So that's another go-to resource to learn more about competency-based education. And then another component, because our program also incorporates our learning guides, our instructional coaches, we also are, you know, constantly looking for ways to help them in their professional development as well. And so the new Teacher Center actually has their own instructional coaching program and practice standards, and you can get those on their website. And that is a great resource because those standards are there to support effective coaching and support leadership with the goal of supporting equitable experiences for teachers and students. And so we're using those standards to help guide workshops and conversations with our coaches, and also for our coaches to use them for self-reflection and planning purposes. So I sort of have like the content, the competency-based, and also our coaching resources sort of in the back of my mind as things that I can go to for guidance and support and sharing with people in our program.
Yeah, and it strikes me that those resources very much mirror the approach that you have, and it seems like they're balanced. You know, you need components of all of them to make it happen. So as always, we'll post those resources on our website with links so people can find them.
Awesome.
And then the last thing, because I'm sure people are curious to find out more about what you all are doing, especially after this conversation, you provide us with a lot of information. How can people find more about this program? What are some resources that they can look at?
So I think the best place to go first would be to our website. And you can go to our website by going to scs.rwu.edu/ESL. And that'll bring you to our website. You'll see a description of the program, and you can also find my contact information there. And if you want to connect with me directly, there's my email, my phone number, and I'd be happy to provide more information to anybody that is looking for it.
Great. And if you're in the area from Providence or Pawtucket or the surrounding area, maybe you could be a part of this at some point. And that being said, I hope that programs like this continue to pop up around the country, because I think you're onto something. I think you've cracked the code not only on how we collaborate with one another, but how we actually set up these programs in a way that they are useful and efficient and challenging for teachers that are coming from a wide variety of backgrounds, who are working with students who are also coming from a wide variety of backgrounds. So thank you so much for joining us and providing this context. We really, really appreciate you you taking the time.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I'm excited to have this opportunity to talk to you and to share the great work that everybody's doing with our program.
Thanks for listening to Highest Aspirations. If you liked our show, please be sure to join the ELL community at elevationeducation.com/ELL community. where you'll find all the episodes of Highest Aspirations and other resources to help educators maximize the impact on their English language learners. Also, let us know how we're doing by writing a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.